Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. New York State investigators have subpoenaed former Trump attorney Michael Cohen as part of their probe into the president's nonprofit Trump Foundation. Yesterday, Cohen admitted in court that he arranged hush money payments to two women on the orders of a federal candidate to influence the 2016 election. New York Attorney General Barbara Underwood is now looking into allegations that the president and his family took money from the charity for personal uses. And the hits just keep on coming for the troubled White House. What does this mean legally and politically for the president and the presidency? My guests are former federal prosecutor and partner at law firm Price Benowitz, Glenn Ivey, A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst, and Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Howard University political science professor. Let's get into this one. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the legal stuff first, Glenn. After the guilty plea involving Michael Cohen and the conviction of former campaign manager Paul Manafort, how much legal trouble is the president in?
Well, I mean, it took a significant jump yesterday. The Cohen piece in particular, I thought, was strong in part because he didn't name the president in the statement of offense or at the hearing, but it was pretty clear that he was saying the president directed me to pay off these women and use campaign finance in violation of the campaign finance laws. So I thought that was a big deal. Obviously, Manafort was, too, because of the potential impact on the Mueller investigation if they had faced acquittals. So I think Mueller came out of yesterday with good momentum moving forward and some validation, especially moving into the September trials.
Now, and again, from a legal perspective, and I find this just really fascinating, and there's been a lot of talk about this today, that had this not involved a president of the United States, if it had involved someone else, a regular Joe.
But whatever that means.
Yes, yeah. I was going to say a regular Donald. Yeah. That it's very likely that that person would have been charged in the Michael Cohen case. Is that correct, Scott?
You mean the individual that was named, the unnamed, unindicted,
yes,
co-conspirator? Maybe, maybe not. Every case is different. I got to tell you, in the agreement that was before the court in the indictment, they said that it was this individual one, and then later on in the write-up, it said who later became the president. So there was no question this was Donald Trump. And we know that Cohen voluntarily issued or released the tape where Cohen and Donald Trump were talking about paying off the newspaper to get control of the rights because they were concerned about what the future would hold for them. Unindicted co-conspirators get indicted later, and sometimes they don't get indicted depending on the goals and objectives of the federal or the state prosecutor. So the short answer is yes, and the short answer is no. I know I sound like a lawyer, but every case is different, and the facts dictate that. The other reason Trump wouldn't be charged is because DOJ is not going to indict him while he's in office. I do think that the state charges that are out there, that bar does not exist. And what will be interesting, Glenn, I think, is whether state investigation takes place over this foundation and whether anyone's criminally charged at the state level in New York, and how does that impact the presidency, whether he can be indicted or not. Because I think Democrats are ready to test the limits. I don't know whether Mueller is at this point, vis-a-vis writing a report, and then if the Dems get in at the midterms, take over the House, then they investigate and then they...
Well, I want to get to that in just a little bit. I don't want to get too far ahead of this, but Michael, politically, you could argue that he is the, if I may use the term, Teflon Don, because it just seems that everything just completely bounces off of the president. And here's an example, and I want you to comment on this, because he said this in an interview with Fox News this morning.
I knew later on, but and they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. Did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign.
He was asked if he knew about the payments to Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels back in April on Air Force One. He said that he didn't know. He didn't know about the money. He didn't know where it came from. He didn't know about the payments. I don't know. And now he says, of course, I knew. But politically, is he in any trouble?
Yes.
Why do you say
this,
that?
And this is new. Previously, he was totally Teflon. He could say anything, do anything, and his base was with him, and they will continue to be with him. The problem he has now is it's one thing to talk in the context of no significant convictions. We now have that. And to Glenn's point, the wheel has begun to turn a little bit. Now, the question is, will it have turned enough to have an impact on the November elections? And if it doesn't, then he can continue to argue about this and fight it off through 2020. And I know we haven't talked about this yet, but I'm one who believes he's not actually even going to run for reelection. And that's a whole other conversation. But if the Democrats do take over in November, then it's a completely different conversation. And that Teflon is going to then be tested in a way that we haven't seen yet.
Well, and here's the other piece too. Obviously the plea agreement that Michael Cohen entered into yesterday regarding the violating of campaign finance laws. That's one thing. But Paul Manafort, in a lot of bigger personal trouble for himself, and yet the president really continued to defend him. Glenn, I know you were, part of the, you were a Senate lawyer. During Whitewater. Whitewater started off as Whitewater and ended up with Monica Lewinsky. Could we see that same kind of situation with Paul Manafort? That had nothing to do with the president, but could that tip the president's way later?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's already moved beyond where it started with respect to the Russian collusion, although he's not necessarily out of the woods on that front either. But yeah, Manafort, the first case in Alexandria, totally unrelated to the Russian collusion issue, although I think Mueller brought it in order to leverage Manafort, he's hoping, into testifying in the investigation against the president. Cohen is completely unrelated in some respects to the Russian piece too. But he really gave a powerful piece with respect to not only the investigation, but putting the president in harm's way with respect to legal exposure. I think that statement essentially was that he violated criminal law. And that's a big step.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about President Trump and the possible legal and political trouble that he could be in as a result of the Cohen and Manafort cases from yesterday. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call. Let me go to Walter quickly, calling from Northeast. Walter, what's on your mind?
Yes.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I'm going to hurry up. Number one, Al Capone was the biggest crime boss in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
But they charged him with tax evasion. So nobody is above the law. And to Dr. Funtroy, I want to give this to you because you are a very good guy. Remember, if Trump does get impeached, if Pence becomes the president, they're going to give him a pardon. So that's going to be scary enough. But I also want to say that Clinton and Whitewater then ended up when he lied about the affair.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Trump is not capable of keeping his peace. I think he's going to explode on Mueller. If he lies, he's going to be charged with perjury.
Okay. Walter, I want to have Michael kind of drill down a little bit for those who may not remember what this whole impeachment piece could very well mean. Because the reality is, let us assume that the Democrats take over the House and we go through this impeachment process. Richard Nixon
resigned rather than be impeached. But an impeachment doesn't mean that you lose the office.
Thank you for raising that. And Bill Clinton is the example. Bill Clinton was impeached by the House, but not convicted by the Senate. And I want to encourage those who want to move quickly on impeachment to sort of pump the brakes a little, because at least at this point, there's no way the Senate is going to vote to convict. Now, that could change. You only need a handful because it's so closely contested. But a Democratic House that would convict, would impeach without certain confidence that they're going to be able to remove him is likely to empower him going forward. Some people should, you all should remember that Bill Clinton was impeached. He was not convicted by the Senate. That afternoon, they held a press conference, a sort of statement in the Rose Garden, in which he sort of said, look, now this is the time to come together. And his approval rating took off from that point on.
Yeah.
And so you got to be careful what you wish for. And then lastly, the caller mentioned Mike Pence. To me, that's really the reason, purely political, why you might not want to move so quickly on Trump. because Mike Pence believes much of the stuff that Trump does, but he's competent politically. Trump is not. Trump is incompetent and doesn't really know what he's doing. Pence knows what he's doing. And in some ways, I'm fearful of Pence as president.
Yeah, but you can be fearful of Pence. You get human decency vis-a-vis just conceptually, okay, with Pence. And if the Dems take the House and or Senate back, then Pence is manageable. Here's the real challenge, though.
But you
don't know.
I
understand. I understand. But here's the thing. You don't know what the Republicans are thinking or feeling right now, or even whatever happens to Trump, because they're being held hostage by Donald Trump and his 40% of people that would vote for him no matter what. And so they're not exercising a whole lot of courage. And so, but when those, if you can move that 30 or 40% who are diehard Trump supporters in this country, if they go away, the Republican leadership, the GOP goes away from Donald Trump. But nobody's been able to pry them away. And so that's why he feels and looks like a Teflon Don. But these indictments are chipping away at that. But the midterms in November are critical, because regardless of whether you pump the brakes on impeachment or not, you still need a majority in the House or Senate to give some resistance, to do some subpoenas, to hold the hearings that the Republicans aren't holding. And until you get to that point, you know, the Democrats are powerless, and the Republicans are friends who stood in silence in our times of challenge. That's who they are. And you got to pry them away. And right now, no matter indictments or not, his 30 or 40% are going away, and the Republicans are going to tolerate this nonsense.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about trouble for President Trump as a result of the conviction of Paul Manafort yesterday and the plea deal of his former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. 202-319-7810. C, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, C. What's on your mind?
Hello. How are you, gentlemen? I hope you're doing pretty well. So this is a great conversation, and I've had this conversation with friends. Here's how I see this, right?
Be real quick, because I've got to go to a break
okay,
in a minute.
Okay, sorry. I'm very excited that, you know, the legal process is happening. Unfortunately, I think that Trump is impervious to any type of punitive action. I think people love him so much that he can do whatever he wants. It doesn't matter. I see this with a lot of celebrities. So I think we aren't going anywhere. Like, we've been doing this. There's been a lot of political corruption, but we don't hold people to the same standards that we hold the civilians to. And we need to start doing that in society. Otherwise, we're going downhill. We are going to fail as a society. We need to stop the double standards.
Okay. Thank you so much, C. I appreciate your comment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Glenn, I need to ask you this, because you do have the perspective again of Whitewater. Okay. So at that time, we saw a lot of piling on as it related to President Clinton. What is different now when you have at least what appears to be so many barbs pointing at the president, and yet the GOP leadership is largely silent? What's happening?
Well, I think it's really happening within their party. So just back to the conversation a moment ago, as long as Trump supported candidates when, or on the other hand, anti-Trump or even people that are kind of marginally critical lose in the Republican primaries, the Republican Party is going to stick with Trump. And right now, that's where it all is. We've had a handful. Every now and then, it will say something remotely negative. I don't see this moving until there has to be a big shift in the elections coming up in November. And then ultimately, I think, you know, Trump's not going to get removed from office. We're not going to have a supermajority in the Senate that would remove him, even if he's impeached in the House. Mm-hmm. He just has to be beaten at the polls one way or another. This is going to be a political resolution in getting him out.
There is a pathway forward, though, because if the Republicans lose the midterms, tell me what you think. If the Republicans lose the midterms, right, and the Senate goes Democratic by a few, the House goes Democratic by so many votes, then not just because of the Democratic votes, but the GOP at that juncture may not have a choice but to walk away from him.
Hold your point, Scott. I'm going to let you finish, but I've got to take a break, and then we'll come back, and I'll let you finish your point. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810 202-319-7810. Ben from Maryland, Cheryl from Maryland, Kwame calling from D.C. You will be able to hear the program. Don't hang up. We'll get to you in just a bit. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Wes Hall is in for Jeff Brown with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about the trouble for President Trump after the plea deal yesterday with his former attorney, Michael Cohen, and Paul Manafort, his former campaign manager, convicted yesterday in federal court. My guests are former federal prosecutor and partner at the law firm Price Benowitz, Glenn Ivey, A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst, and Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Howard University political science professor. We're going to go back to the phones in just a bit, but Scott, please finish your point.
Just real quickly, that there is a pathway forward where I think we can put Trump in a box and he loses his support. If the Dems take the House back and take the Senate back, maybe by a few seats, then the GOP would have lost in a very big way. Trump holds the party, the GOP, hostage by this 30 or 40%. But if they lose, that's his base. But his electoral base had to be more than that. That electoral base he's lost, that is the gap between the core base and those who got him elected in 2016. And so those suburbanites, those independents, those moderate Republicans are looking for a reason to leave him if they haven't left already. And so if GOP loses big time in the midterms, then I think you may see the Republicans more willing to walk away from him or attack him because they have nothing to lose at that juncture.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Cheryl calling from Maryland. What's on your mind, Cheryl?
Yeah, well, I was just, you know, I've been following this thing from when the elections got rigged. And my concern is that I feel like Trump is actually trying, you know, people looking at this. This is all about the power and the money. And people are looking at, and Trump wants to be the dictator to me. My concern is him with the relationship with Putin. And I'm really fearful that we're going to lose our democracy and could be under the regime of Russia. So we need to really get out and vote, whether our elections are being rigged by this Russia thing that they're talking about or not. You know, we got to get the House back, Democrats.
Cheryl, you make an excellent point, and this brings me to this next piece, because again, it was last night in West Virginia that the president called for an end to the Russian meddling investigation, and indeed he continues to call it a witch hunt.
Fake news and the Russian witch hunt. We got a whole big combination. Where is the collusion? You know, they're still looking for collusion. Where is the collusion? Find some collusion.
A lot of bluster there, Michael. But could the collusion point to Donald Trump Jr. first?
Well, first, let me just say the president sounds like a clown. that was just a ridiculous presentation.
Well, he's being entertaining. Right. Okay, so for his base. So,
he's lying. So I've been, that's what we call it where I come from, lying.
So I've been telling my students for over a year that the president's going to have to make a decision. And that decision is going to be either Jared or Junior. He's got to make a choice. Because both of those two guys are at the center of this entire piece. And so I think ultimately, and this gets back to the theory I'm developing on why the president's not going to run for reelection, but ultimately the issues with Donald Trump Jr. and his incompetence in taking that meeting with the Russians, and that's what we know about. There may be other things, to me, is what's really going to end up driving this.
Yeah. Yeah. And he keeps talking about, and this is the thing that I find so interesting, because first of all, there was no collusion. And then his personal attorney, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, is saying that there was no collusion. But even if it was, it wasn't a crime. And it's like intellectual double dutch. To me, just jump, 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 handstand on your feet, handstand on your. It's just amazing to me. But again, put politically, is the base just not hearing this? If the economy took a dive, would they be, for example, more readily willing to kick him to the curb?
Well, that's the open question. He's got this 40%. But the interesting statistic is that 90% of the Republican Party, when you poll them, agree with him, but he's only got a 42% approval rating. So there's a gap, or somebody's just lying, as they have always lied in regard to their questions about Donald Trump. So that'll remain to be seen. But they have bought into – that 40% has bought into his nonsense and those rallies. And these are people who feel like him and feel like the country is going black and brown and our colors – our communities of color are taking over. So they're going to stay there even if the economy goes south, because they buy into his rhetoric, right? But his rhetoric is not reality.
You were
and
about
I would just say quickly, you got to remember these are people who believe that there is this deep state. Okay, they believed all of the worst things that could have been said about the Clintons. All right, so Trump was in some respects the right person at the right time to sort of take advantage of all of that politically. So as long as he's continuing to say those things, barring some substantial economic question or political sort of landslide at the ballot box, they're going to remain with him as long as he keeps saying deep state, witch hunt. The establishment is after me kind of thing.
Immigrants are criminals and rapists. They buy into that. They live that life, and he narrates their life for them. That's why they stay with him. But again, it's not reality. He also has to have an enemy, right? So his enemy in 2016 was Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. 2 years later, he's still talking about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and they're not walking through that White House door. But to those to that 40% who are conspirators, who believe in all of this, it's like a cult to them, right?
Don't forget about the fake news, too.
And the fake news also.
Don't forget about me.
Fake is you disagree with it.
Let me add this point. I mean, I saw on The Hill today that he's actually at 48%. Mm-hmm. Right. And you would think that after the week that he's had, I mean, we forget the stuff that happened last week, Omarosa and all that stuff.
And I was going to bring that up again, but please go ahead.
There's such a barrage of things, but the numbers are not going down. Okay. Mm-hmm. And at the state to state level, which is all senators care about, his numbers are staying strong in places like Kentucky and Mississippi and all of those places where the Democrats need to pick up seats in order to get a majority and anything close to a supermajority, which is 67 votes to get him out of there. I don't see it happening. I think we're just going to have to beat him at the ballot box. And remember, he lost to Hillary. He had 3 million votes less than Hillary Clinton in the national election.
But don't forget, those are the 3 million illegal votes that he kept talking. it just hit me. Yes, he lost to Hillary Clinton by 3 million votes. And why it just never came to me. He said 3 million people voted illegally. That was his claim. And he said that's why he lost the popular vote. Go figure. Let me go back to the phone. Ben calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Ben. What's on your mind?
Good evening, gentlemen. I just want to make two quick points. I agree. A little while ago, a gentleman said, don't rush to impeachment. And I agree with that, with this. They must take back the House to do anything, because, and the reason why I say that is, if they take back the House, then they can hold hearings. And the hearings, I think, are the cue. I think you gentlemen are probably old enough to remember the Watergate hearings. And I remember that the hearings every day on TV, public hearings in the Congress, really had a lot to do with bringing the public's attention to what was going on. And also to give those folks who are in the White House or in his government, who are instead leaking, a forum to actually speak in public, like John Dean finally did, like Alexander Butterfield did, so that can come out in that forum. Because, like, my personal opinion is, if they don't take back the House and it's just a show in the news, he will be renominated. And if he is renominated, then it's just a matter of how close he needs to do to get reelected. And he already won without the popular vote.
Okay. So, well, Ben, thank you so much. I want to talk about something that Ben just said, and I think I touched upon this earlier, and certainly, you know, I'll ask Glenn, and you guys can kind of chime in. This isn't 1973. Is America different now? Were we less of a moral pit then? Republicans, I could argue, were different. Democrats were different. Certainly the Senate and the House was different when Richard Nixon was going through his Watergate issues. Is Omarosa so severely tainted that whatever she may release won't matter? Is Michael Cohen so severely tainted that whatever he may share in the coming weeks and months, if he does, might it not matter?
Well, I think things have changed dramatically since the Watergate era that are going to make it harder for the hearings to make. Even if we win the House, will these hearings make a difference? I don't know that that's the case for a couple of reasons. One is the Republican Party is much further to the right than it was in the Watergate era. There's nobody, it's hard to find a moderate that would be somebody like a Howard Baker or someone along those lines, because they got, quote unquote, purified from the party. This was the Republican Party effort that started with Newt Gingrich.
Right. Yeah,
and
in
it's
the 90s,
really kind of hit a culmination point now with Trump. So the people who were in that category who could say, wow, I think it's the best thing to do for the country, they're not in the Republican Party, especially if McCain leaves. That's about it in the Senate. Maybe what's her name from Maine?
Yeah,
that's about it. Yeah. And then the other big piece that the Republicans did with Gingrich was they created a whole separate media stream that, like Fox News and all of that stuff. So when you're talking to those extreme Republican folks, that's all they watch.
Yeah,
that's all they hear on the radio. That's all they see in the newspapers. And we have our version of that, too, in the Democratic side. So they don't see the crossover news, right? So when you – like, if you looked at Fox News stuff last night, it was like Cohen and Manafort. It was like some completely different
– those stories literally did not exist.
Yeah, something else. I mean, yeah.
They're not watching what we're watching.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about the weather or something over there. You know, so I think that's a big challenge. But having said that, we got to take the House back. I think it does help to have those kinds of investigations going. I think the policy impact is really critical, because then you can stop a lot of the crazy stuff that House Republicans are moving forward now that can get passed because they can control all three branches.
But, Michael, let's be clear. Michael Cohen is not John Dean. Okay. First of all, he was a personal attorney. John Dean was counsel for the office of the president. But even as people,
right,
they're completely different kinds of men.
So it is true. Michael Cohen is a lot of things, but a monument to integrity is not one of them. But let me tell you, Don McGahn might be John Dean. McGahn is the current White House counsel,
mm-hmm,
who it was revealed over the weekend that he spent at least 30 hours and at least three interviews with Robert Mueller's team. Now, I'm going to defer to my former prosecutors here, but 30 hours seems like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you have to talk to him for 30 hours if there's not something up. So we'll see where it lands, but we're still at the very early stages of this. And I want the listeners to also recall that during the Nixon hearings, it was about a year had elapsed between when John Dean testified and when Richard Nixon resigned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're still very much in the middle of this. And I would not be shocked if a year from now, this is still going on.
And let it be said, Richard Nixon was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in March of 74. He resigned in August. So we're talking five months or so?
Yeah.
Yeah. A long, long time. I'm going to take a break, and then, Scott, I'll let you make your point. We're going to talk to Kwame also on the other side. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Scott, we were talking about the political climate, mm-hmm, and, you know, the difference between the situation now,
yeah,
and the Nixon situation.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is that the Republicans in the House and Senate during Nixon had some statesmen. The Republican Party believed in country over party, at least many of them did. There were some that didn't. And in 2016, or rather 2018, where are the statesmen? Where are the Jack Kemps of the world that will stand up and say this is fundamentally wrong and get other Republicans to follow them? Every Republican that stands up and says this is wrong and I try to be statesmanlike, then I run it for reelection. And the same ones that stand up have a 95% approval rating of what Trump's agenda has been on the Republican side. And so I'm waiting for the statesmen to appear on the Republican side. And I think, I go back to this again, I think the ramifications of the Dems taking the House and or Senate may help in that process. It may be my best guess, Professor, but I'm telling you that at some point in time, enough is enough. And instead of the Democrats being fiscal hawks on the budget, can you believe that? Or the Democrats defending Department of Justice and the FBI, you know, this stuff's been turned on its head, that the Republicans will find a way home because they will no longer be held hostage by Trump because he will be weakened by these losses in the midterm. I think that's the next level we get to. At least maybe that's what I'm hoping. But I think it's going to have some impact on the Republican Party as well.
Let me go to Kwame. Kwame calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure.
I've been working in the federal government now for about 18 years, and I have firsthand knowledge that the NAACP from Prince George's County, blacks in government, they all tried to work with this administration by way of Omarosa. I watched Omarosa go on to some commentary with Ed Gordon and back-to-back, and she made comments that no black organizations was trying to work with this administration, and I knew for a fact that that was not true. Here's my question for your panel. How exactly are African-Americans, or even if there is an African-American agenda, how exactly we are able to forge some sort of movement on an agenda, whether it's Barack Obama in office or whether it's Trump in office? It just seems to me that there's no real force behind any of the agendas, if there is an agenda that exists, upon which African-American leadership is able to even get anything done.
Well, let me, Kwame, let me stop you there so that we can answer the question. And let's stick with the president that's in office now, because President Obama is enjoying his wife, his family, and surfing right now. And we're, and, you know, we're just going to leave him alone because he's out of office. But,
but you get his point, though.
Yeah, I completely understand. And considering the unraveling of the Obama agenda that has been going on for almost a year and a half now, I really don't see President Obama making any inroads with the current president. But, Glenn, I'll start with you.
Well, I mean, I think some of the challenges that are coming for African-Americans are, you know, date back many generations, frankly, with the Democratic Party. We've never actually gotten the kind of due for what we bring to the party, because I think there essentially there would be no Democratic Party right now without the black vote. So almost everybody in office is there in part because they had a big black vote. And having said that, we still need bigger turnout. So you've got the race, the governor's race in Georgia, for example. There's a lot of places like that where we've got African-American candidates with a big turnout. We could push them over. White candidates who are running, Democrats who are running against Republicans, a big turnout. We could help push that over. But I really do think that not only winning these elections, but making sure we make it clear to the Democratic Party that, okay, we got you here. What are you going to do for us?
But it sounds to me like, per Kwame's question, that there's no inroad with President Trump, and we just need to try to make some moves at the polls.
Look, we are the anti with respect to Trump and his supporters. It's, and it's not just us. I mean, this is, you know, Mexicans are
people.
All criminals and all. I mean, we could go on and on about the stuff he's done to vilify anybody who doesn't fit into this Make America Great vision, which is primarily, you know, white males.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We just have to beat it. We've got the majority. There's more people who aren't in that category than are. And if we turn out on election day, we can make that change overnight, really.
So the President Trump is not interested in doing anything constructive with black people on the kinds of issues that black people are generally concerned with. So back to Glenn's point, until you change who's in control of Congress, you're not going to get any real movement on this. The reality is that while presidents have enormous power, the budgets that support initiatives come out of Congress. And one of the real disappointments that I've seen repeatedly over the years, not just during the Obama years, is that as it pertains to African-American turnout, we can move it fairly well in presidential election years. But there are all kinds of other elections
that people forget about,
that people don't really care about. Mm-hmm. But when you look at state and local races, you know, we talk a lot about what's going on nationally. But the reality is day-to-day lives of people are more impacted by what goes on in state and local decision making.
Sure.
And too often we don't pay attention to those races. So until we get that part going, I think we're going to continue to struggle without regard to the president.
And his biggest black supporter is now his biggest enemy, Omarosa. So I really don't think that he's got a whole lot good to say about black
folks. Trump.
Yeah, Jerron Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Trump.
The mystery.
He's an equal opportunity. He's an equal opportunist when it comes to people who's falling out with. Let me take a different approach. You know, I wish Donald Trump was better at being a leader and a president. We're all countrymen. And so if you want to pick a place to work with Donald Trump, I would have picked a year ago that because of his business background and because he asked the question, what
do you
have
to
lose?
Yeah.
Right? That he would do better in our communities of color, that he would end the violence. Whether we liked how he ended it was one thing, but that he would end the violence in our communities of color, that he would provide jobs job training, entrepreneurship training, and get African Americans and gang leaders and those who are entrenched in day-to-day struggles economically, socially.
Urban renewal projects,
and take claim for it versus taking claim for a reduction in unemployment for black people, which just is the employment's down. So, of course, black unemployment is down. But not because there are any targeted programs towards African Americans, and then take credit for turning our communities of color around, which he has the know, arguably has the know-how and the intention of doing, at least during the campaign. That has been off the agenda. He's never spoken about it. And I think if he politically now, just purely politically, if he were really smart, right, as he goes through his presidency, he could claim even more victories with people of color if he would focus on that urban renewal, on ending violence in our communities and getting jobs and education standards up. If he did that, that would be a dangerous political policy that the Democrats would have a problem addressing, but he won't do it.
And part of that is because his racism is too strong
in
that regard. But, you know, you asked earlier, how different are we now than then?
Mm-hmm.
Richard Nixon, who could not be elected as a Republican right now, just to show you how different
that's true,
openly, repeatedly, and seriously talked about advancing the idea of black capitalism. He actually used those words.
Started the SBA.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He made black millionaires in the 70s.
So you think Donald Trump is going to talk about that?
So that's
where we are right now.
Well, Kwame, thank you so much for steering our conversation in a different way, but certainly something that we needed to think about. Thank you so much. I've got a few seconds, a few minutes left. Are we going to see Michael Cohen in an open congressional hearing? What are the chances of that?
Yes.
You think so?
Yeah, I think Lanny Davis, he's got a spokesman, a guy named Lanny Davis, who was also one of the spokesmen for Clinton during the White House era when I was on the Senate staff.
And he seems older but sharp as ever.
Oh, yeah. And he's made it very clear that Cohen can't wait to get out there and tell his story. I think we'll see how it unfolds. And Congressman Cummings already said, hey, open invitation. We got a chair right here for you and a mic.
You need a subpoena? We get that for you, but just
now,
come on.
Now, the Republicans are in no rush to get him up there, for sure. But if the Democrats take the House back, he'll be there in January. I guarantee it.
So they're sworn in on January 2nd, I think.
I think my colleague is right. I also think, though, a lot of it depends on what's next for Michael Cohen. Whether he's going to be still cooperating then with the feds, whether he is done cooperating with them and is about to be sentenced, or perhaps even after he gets sentenced. Because I don't think the feds or Michael Cohen and his attorney want to negatively impact Mueller's strategy or the U.S. Attorney in Southern District of New York's strategy in going forward. Remember, we don't know all that they have. We see snippets of it, and of course we had drama in the courtroom yesterday, but there's a lot more to this. I mean, you're talking about someone like McGahn, but you're talking about Cohen, you're talking about Manafort, you're talking about Flynn. You don't get much closer to Donald Trump than those four guys other than his family. And so my sense is there's a lot more information out there, and that Mueller knows a lot more. He's kind of spoon feeding us when he feels like it, right?
And you hear very, very little from him.
No, he's just got his head down and he's driving and grinding.
The one thing I did want to say before I wrap things up, there probably could have been a 19th charge for Paul Manafort, which the jury probably would have convicted him on, and that is bad taste and expensive clothes. boy, that ostrich jacket. Yeah. What can you say?
I kind of like the snakeskin jacket.
Yeah,
I'm from Joliet, Illinois, so.
Glenn Ivey, A. Scott Bolden, and Dr. Michael Fauntroy, thank you so much for talking to us. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk to in the coming months, weeks, and the way things are going, hours. You just don't know. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, August 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.